Hi, I'm Mark Brody, and this is the Friday Newscap Podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
The plan seems to be to break the federal government in order to help rich people. And I can't get on board with that.
We've built a very solid economic relationship with Mexico over decades, and the impacts to Arizona could be substantial.
This is an example of the president's leadership. He's a business person and he understands what works and what doesn't, and he's brought Canada and Mexico, in this example today, Mexico to the table.
We are what we eat, and the state of Arizona has a responsibility to protect our children and their health. This bill respects children, keeping dangerous chemicals away from their food.
Our role, we're taught, is to run, hide, and then if we have to fight, but only as the last resort. So this gives an option rather than being a victim.
Obviously, in the bill it says, in good faith, if they have some concerns about election, that they have the right to question that and not just feel forced to certify the election.
And with me to talk about the threat and then pause of tariffs against Arizona's two biggest trading partners, a proposal to allow guns in schools and more, our former state school superintendent Jaime Molera with the firm Molera Alvarez. Jaime, good morning.
Good morning.
And Matt Grodsky with Matters of State Strategies. Matt, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Jaime, let me start with you on the proposed and then paused tariffs against Mexico and Canada, Arizona's two biggest trading partners. It seems as though this was one that maybe people of all political stripes were, there's just general, it seemed like confusion was the biggest reaction to all this.
Well, you had a Freudian slip about this being against Arizona, because it kind of would have been against Arizona. This would have been a really big hit to our economy. But I guess the Trump administration, and it's interesting how this played out. I mean, it didn't surprise me in a lot of ways, because I've always seen President Trump really as a developer. I mean, that's his mentality. And the developers I've worked with time and time again are very aggressive. They really want to, you know, come into negotiations with a lot of dynamite to blow things up.
Move fast and break stuff, right?
But, you know, I got to tell you that his rhetoric in the campaign turned out to be accurate. I mean, that's one of the things that I think a lot of the folks in the Republican side of the aisle are very pleased with, is that, see, finally, we have somebody who's a politician is willing to go out and say and do what he said on the campaign trail. And so I think it's going to be interesting how this plays out. I don't think it's over.
Yeah.
I certainly believe that they're going to use this stick against Canada and Mexico, as well as the EU, too, because I think that's the next one that's going to be coming down the pike.
Matt, politically, like, we've seen obviously a lot of Democrats coming out and saying this is terrible, this is bad for the economy. A lot of Republicans are saying it would probably hurt the economy as well, too. But, like, is this the kind of issue that Democrats might be able to, assuming that the tariffs go into effect at some point? Is this something Democrats can take and run with, maybe?
Absolutely. I mean, not that you want bad things to happen to the population and the economy, but talking about economic issues are going to be the key for Democrats in the coming months. You know, I think that the president, obviously, he's out there claiming he got these concessions, even though there was some conversation that this was things they were already planning to do anyway. But I think he saw the stock market, right? And he saw the reaction from the business community, even some folks that thought he might have just been saber-rattling during the campaign. And I think he pivoted because of that, right? And so I think if he continues to do that, I agree. I don't think it's over yet.
Yeah.
So his honeymoon period could go away faster than a Mark Fincham speeding ticket if he's not careful. So we'll see.
Insider political reference right there.
Yeah, right.
So let me ask both of you, if you think that this episode says anything or is a harbinger of the way that the Trump administration, of its relationship with Mexico for the next 4 years, and if that has any kind, what kind of impact that might have for Arizona?
Well, I believe, you know, we've been doing quite a bit. My firm's been doing quite a bit with Mexico trade issues, and certainly there's a lot of angst within not just the Mexican government, but also within the Mexican business community. Mm. A lot of investment that's been going on there, you know, people feel not at ease. Mm-hmm. I just put it that way.
Yeah.
The one thing that concerns me, though, is that over the last several years, you've seen a lot more penetration of the Mexican business market by China. And I think there's a legitimate fear that if we continue to be very aggressive and seen as anti-Mexican, then I think China becomes more of a threat in our own hemisphere.
Mm.
And that's something that it's disconcerting because I think that having if you look at the amount of investments in Chinese corporations that are coming into Mexico, I think that's something that should give us pause. And that's certainly one of the things that we're going to be talking about over the next few months as we engage with Mexican business leaders as well as Arizona's political leaders.
Sure. So, Matt, do you think that this episode says anything about the Trump administration's future relationship with Mexico and maybe that what that might mean for Arizona?
Yeah, I think it's instability. And I completely agree. I think the common thread that we're seeing, not just with these tariffs, but with things like USAID and kind of ceding our ground as a leader in the world, that vacuum is going to be filled by China and other adversaries. And I think as Democrats, we've struggled to articulate that to swing voters and individuals that maybe don't pay attention to the news cycle every day. You know, there's a cost for not being the leader of the free world. There's a cost for not having these relationships overseas. And when you see China encroach in our southern hemisphere, you know, that's going to have ramifications long term. So I think the common thread is instability, and we'll see what happens with that.
Interesting. All right. So, guys, at the risk of putting the cart, I don't know, 2 years before the horse here, let me ask you about the Cook Political Report. It's a prognostication service has listed two Arizona congressional districts as toss-ups among 18 nationwide. I don't think for people who are paying attention to, you know, congressional politics, this will not be a surprise. It's the CD1, the David Schweiker district, CD6, the Ciscomani district. Matt, there is a lot of talk just a few months ago that Democrats might be able to pull off one or both of those, and they didn't. What has to change for Democrats to be successful in those swing type districts?
Yeah, I'll be blunt. We have to really take voter registration seriously. It has plummeted for us statewide since 2020. We were fairly stable in 2022, but it's really gone down. I mean, you saw how competitive CD1 was back in 2022. It's gone less competitive given the voter registration disadvantage for Democrats. You know, thousands of voters have gone to independent or switched parties altogether. So if we want to actually consider these as swing toss-up districts, we need to worry about getting more voters into our tent. And until we do that, I'm concerned we're going to have the same issue over and over again.
Jaime, we've seen Congressman Schweiker listed as vulnerable for I don't know how many election cycles
in a row elected,
at this point. Yeah. And he's every 2 years he pulls it out and wins. Right. What I guess is there reason to think that that might be different for both he and Congressman Ciscomani in southern Arizona?
See, I don't. I think the best chance the Democrats had of unseating them is during the presidential election year. You tend to see much more higher turnout with Democrats. And in 2026, it's going to be a gubernatorial election. They're going to have a lot of interest. But I just don't think you get the kind of turnout that can beat them at this point. And then the other thing I think Democrats should be concerned about, and certainly I think this has been helpful to the Republican Party, you see a lot more dissatisfaction, particularly amongst minority groups. So you saw the Latino men vote was considerable for President Trump, but it was also very helpful to Ciscomani and Schweikert, particularly Juan Ciscomani. And I think a lot of the policies and the attitudes of the wokeness, the social policies, have been very damaging to the Democrat brand. And so that's one of the things, in my opinion, they're going to have to deal with. But certainly the Republicans are in a good position if they take that momentum, and hopefully they'll do that. I mean, I've always been disappointed in Republicans' ability to outreach to these minority groups. But there's an opening there that I think if they are smart about it and aggressive about it and put their money where their mouths are, that could pay off long term.
Obviously, 2 years is an eternity. I mean, 2 weeks is an eternity in politics. 2 years is even more than that. But at this point where we stand at the beginning of February in 2025, is it fair to say that at least to some extent, we don't know to what extent, but that the even down ballot, you know, congressional races in 2 years will be in some way a referendum on President Trump?
Yeah, it could be. I mean, and that's always a big issue. I mean, presidents usually have a tough time in the mid-elections or they're after their first term.
Yeah.
So that's where I think a lot of the opportunity that the Democrats see, and certainly I believe the Hobbs administration is hoping that that happens because they can piggyback on that.
Mm-hmm.
But as I mentioned, those other issues I think are very deep, and I think they could penetrate the psyche of a lot of voters to say, look, we don't want to go back to that. Mm-hmm. As crazy as the Trump administration might be, we just want that stability, and we want that notion that we're not going to get that kind of DEI, you know, policies that are going to affect our ability to raise our families or things like that.
Well, so Matt, as Democrats are thinking about sort of regrouping after November, how much of the conversation is about their policies and maybe trying to talk more about the economy? You've heard a lot about that. And how much is sort of anti-Trump?
Yeah. No, it's interesting. I mean, I think we recognize as a whole that we have a perception issue. You know, individual campaigns and state parties think that they're talking about economic issues and that they're, you know, appealing to the middle of the road. But the right-wing ecosystem has been able to convince a large swath of voters that our primary issues are, you know, the wokeness factor, right? So we have to fix that and address it. Luckily, we have a playbook for that. We saw that in the backlash to 2016. We had big success in 2018, but we didn't get that by being passive and just depending purely on outrage. You know, you had to message and show that you were the common sense party, and we need to get back to that. So that's going to be a key component of our strategy.
Matt, let me start with you on a bill that would essentially allow guns in public schools. It would allow teachers and some staff to carry on campus as a school safety measure, its proponents say. There is some training firearms requirement. There's some sort of de-escalation training in there. I'm curious, like, this seems like something that maybe the governor wouldn't support necessarily, not trying to predict what she's going to do. But the fact that we are having this conversation, I think, says something. I'm not sure what, but it says something.
Well, let's talk about the fact that we're having this conversation. I think elections have consequences. And we've seen in polling and data over the years and as recently as last year that Arizona voters, it's tight margins, but by and large, they want stricter gun laws and common sense safety measures. And that is kind of adverse to what you're seeing come out of the legislature with, you know, Republican majorities. So this is what happens, you know, when Democrats don't win the legislature. This is the conversation we have around guns. So we'll see what happens. But I'm not so confident that that's actually going to pass and become law. But we'll see.
Does this have a chance, you think, Amy?
No.
because of
the governor's veto. Okay. It'll pass the legislature. It went out on a party line vote earlier this week, and it'll get out of the Senate on a party line vote. I imagine it'll get up to her, be one of the first bills that is going to arrive on her desk, but she's going to veto it. So, but remember, when Doug Ducey was governor, these types of bills were out there, but they were stopped. And they were stopped because, well, we don't want the governor to have to veto a gun bill. But now they have a Democrat in the governor's office. Of course, Republicans are saying, absolutely, let's give her every gun bill that we can.
Do you think that this bill would actually make schools safer?
I don't. I think it's one of those things. It's being talked about as a silver bullet. No pun intended.
Nah. Well done.
But honestly, I mean, I'm a big believer in Second Amendment and a believer of people to defend themselves. Public schools, I think, just need to be a place that it's a gun-free zone. We have sensible laws around that in Arizona. We have sensible laws around that in bars, for instance. So I just think that we just need to try and take the rhetoric out of this and try and come up with rational things to keep our kids safe.
So speaking of keeping kids safe and in this case healthy, let me ask you, stay with you, Jaime, about a proposal to get a lot of ultra-processed foods out of schools, both, it sounds like, you know, in the cafeteria, but also in vending machines, you know, a lot of chips and candy and stuff like that. This, you know, there's been a lot of talk about this with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and the Make America Healthy Again movement. I'm curious what you make of this particular measure.
Well, I guess my libertarian bit comes out in situations like this. I'm always a big believer that that's the parents' responsibility to make sure the health of their kid is taken care of, bottom line.
Okay.
I think there's always this mission creep in our public education system where they want to not just educate the students, which is that's their mission. That's their primary responsibility. But we're going to deal with all these other social issues. We're going to deal with sex education. We're going to deal with health now. So I would just wish that we would get back to our primary mission, certainly talking about it and saying to parents, you know, you should, you know, and having that bully pulpit, I think, is fine and fair. But just to come down and wanting to deal with every single social issue is just very problematic for me.
Matt, it seems like it would be kind of a delicate balance of, I mean, there are studies that show that, you know, students who are not hungry and are well-fed do better in school. It's a better learning environment. But I wonder, like, the difference between, you know, serving tater tots and sloppy joes every day that kids will eat but maybe isn't the healthiest versus, like, plates of broccoli, which is healthy but maybe kids aren't going to eat.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not an expert on the subject, but I think there's a healthy medium there. I am confident that there's bipartisan support for this. It does seem fairly common sense. You know, I'm sure it'll become controversial in the coming days because that's what happens with every issue. But I am genuinely curious if the superintendent is worried about what will happen at the federal level with this. As we've seen, you know, the Trump administration in the past in the first term rolled back Michelle Obama's healthy lunch program. You know, I think a lot of the people in his circle want to continue those types of rollbacks. So, you know, I understand this from the state level, but there are, you know, threats on the federal horizon as well.
I mean, might this be a way to try to get out in front of whatever could be coming down from D.C.?
It could be. It could be. I mean, we'll see. It is Tom Horn, so a broken clock is right at least twice a day, but we'll see what happens.
Do you think it's possible, Jaime, that this – I mean, obviously it's –
Yes, I believe a broken clock is right twice a day.
Not what I was going for.
Oh, sorry.
But, like, I mean – obviously, you know, there's been a lot of talk and this seems sort of modeled on what seems to be coming from D.C. But in terms of the actual rules of the road, like, right, could Arizona be trying to say, OK, look, we've got our own system here, as opposed to having whatever comes from D.C. be what we have to do here?
I don't think it's that well thought out, Mark. I really don't. I think this is something the current superintendent thinks will give him good headlines, and it's getting good headlines. But then I go back to asking the question, okay, what about Latino kids that bring frijoles and tortillas into, oh, that's not that healthy. You know, it's made with a lot of lard. So, again, I just wish that, you know, put the information out there, try and educate people as best we can. But at the end of the day, let parents raise their kids.
All right. So let me ask you both about the changes in the governor's office, the new budget director. It was a bit of a surprise a week or so ago when the governor's former budget director announced that she'd be stepping down next week, I think, is going to be her last day. Ben Henderson is going to be the new budget director. Matt, this comes at a pretty important time, right? The governor has released her budget proposal, and it sounds like, you know, they're going to start talking with the legislature pretty soon about what they might want to do for the fiscal year come July 1.
Yeah, it comes at an important time. You know, Henderson, he's not new. You know, he's been in the administration, so there's not a big learning curve there by any means, obviously qualified. I think from a political perspective, you know, voters don't care about this issue. I think if you went out on the street and asked 10 people, I'd be shocked if two of them knew about this type of stuff. So I think the negotiations will go on. I don't think that's going to throw a bunch of wrenches in the process. But from a political perspective, I don't think it carries any ramifications long term.
But in terms of the actual policy, I guess I'm kind of curious, like, what does it mean, if anything, to have somebody, yes, somebody from the administration, but somebody new to that role come in kind of midstream who didn't presumably have much of a role in crafting the original proposal? Does that matter?
I think it depends. You know, I think that by this point in time, everybody's pretty much aligned on the strategy. So I don't think, you know, bringing in a new quarterback, you know, is essentially going to change the entire dynamic of the operation. The goal is still to win the game, and they've got their play. So I think, you know, given the Super Bowl's coming up, that's the best analogy I'll throw at you.
Yeah, thank you for making the Super Bowl reference.
No problem.
Do you think it matters at all to have somebody coming in midstream like this?
Well, regardless, I think they had to make the change. I think Ben would be a good addition and as a budget director, but they had to make the change, Mark. When the governor's office presented to the joint appropriations committees, it was pretty embarrassing. They just couldn't, they could not answer simple questions about the budget process. Matt Gress, a former budget director for under Governor Ducey and now representative
Gress, yeah,
was merciless because he knows the budget. He knows that they didn't know simple questions. So I think they need to bring back some sense of understanding of what the process is and some confidence in that the governor's office, their numbers, for instance, the access numbers were off by $1 billion. Just basic errors were made. And so that's why I think making that change was critical for the Hobbs team.
Do you think that someone like Ben Henderson improves the situation for the governor's office?
Oh, I do. Absolutely. Yeah. I think he's got a good reputation. I'm not sure of his budget acumen, candidly. But certainly known as a bright, you know, up-and-coming person within that administration. So I think that, again, that change was needed.
Sure. Jaime, let me ask you also about another change at the State House. Michael Hunter, the longtime chief of staff for the House, announced that he will be stepping down in a week or so.
Right.
That he has been in the Capitol community for a very long time, tons of institutional knowledge. Right. That seems like a loss to have him leaving.
It is a loss. I've known Michael. He's been a friend for many, many years. I know Speaker Montenegro was not happy with it, but he understood. It was a very serious issues that he and his family are going through. So yeah. I think it was probably the best decision for him. Certainly not the best decision for the House of Representatives. I think they're going to, you know, it's hard to lose somebody of that stature and his institutional knowledge.
Yeah, Matt, what do you think? I mean, obviously, as Jaime said, he's been there for a long time, knows a ton of stuff.
Yeah, I agree. Institutional knowledge, and my understanding is he's had a positive rapport with folks from the other side, right? And so mm-hmm. I think the question I have is who comes up to replace him? And is it someone right. more on the mold of more of the kind of extremist MAGA group these days? And what does that do to the already tenuous dynamics in the state legislature?
I mean, that seems like another, like you were talking about the governor's budget director, like people don't necessarily know who these staffers are,
yeah.
but what some of that behind the scenes stuff really can impact how the legislature functions and the kind of policy that comes out.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on how much influence they have, right? And I think every team has, you know, a different strategy for what their key players do. But yeah. I mean, this will be a wild card, right? Because I don't think it's clear who the heir apparent is. So we'll have to watch that.
All right. So Matt, you've mentioned wild cards and quarterbacks.
I know,
so got
right?
I'm going to ask both of you. We've got just a few seconds left. Who's going to win on Sunday, Eagles or Chiefs? Who you got?
I'm inclined to say the Chiefs only because the refs seem to really like them these days.
Wow, conspiracy theories
yeah,
on the left now. All right.
I know.
Jaime, who you got?
I'm going to go with the Philadelphia Eagles. I'm going to go out on a limb because I think they've done a really good job of making sure the refs are given the resources they need in order to be successful.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. I will say this is not where I thought the conversation about the Super Bowl was going to go when I asked if it was okay to talk about it. All right. So you got one Chiefs, one Eagles. Neither of you have rooting interest, though, right?
No.
You're both just watching for the ads.
Correct.
That's right. Exactly right.
Fair enough.
And to see Taylor Swift.
Yeah, we're going to see a lot of Taylor Swift again. That's for right. sure. Jaime Molero, Matt Grotzky, thanks to you both. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's biggest stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Mark Brody. Thanks for listening.